interrupt your day to bring you some very bad, very breaking news. This is Malas Noticias, where our news is muy, muy mala. Get your boots and your coat for this wet apocalypse. The floodwaters are rising, the fires are spreading, and the hellhole formerly known as the United States is submerged in pestilence and plague. In other local news, 99% of Californians do not have an earthquake kit, and Mayor Garcetti owes this reporter compensation for all the tires his potholes have popped. Mayor Garcetti also owes this reporter compensation for the years of my life I have wasted looking for parking in this godforsaken dream of a city. Also happening in Los Angeles, California, IA, the burnouts are burned out, and is it just me, or is butt not hitting like it did during pandemic round one? Can it be that not even weed can settle our nerves throughout the rapture? Well, that's too dang bad. Weed is all we've got, so keep smoking and keep coping, my friends, because the coke is laced with fentanyl and people are dying. So light that J and enjoy the fucking show. This has been a special edition of Malas Noticias, where our news is muy, muy mala. And now, for the main event.
She's a depressed 20-something with a college degree, who copes with life by smoking too much weed. Dodgy and cochinos as she rolls down the street.
Oye, mami, I wanna be your dog.
Aim higher, pendejo.
She's la marihuanera, as seen on IG.
That's me.
Marihuanera.
All right, Marihuaneras, welcome back to another episode of Marihuanera, a podcast for potheads. This is episode 8 with me, your most servant-minded and humble host, Mala Munoz. I'm thrilled to be back and recording. I feel like the last couple episodes, we deviated a little bit from the format, but you know that's going to happen sometimes. Check out my last episode with Chelly of Chicali Products, talking about CBD going from being a midnight toker to a business stoner. Chelly is a businesswoman and she makes CBD products for that ass. So check out the last episode, episode 7. Leave us a review. Check out Chicali Products and buy that CBD stuff. It's good stuff. That's some healing, healing stuff right there. This is going to be, you know, back to basics, back to the Marihuanera format that I am training you to know and love. So thank you for joining us. And by us, I mean me and all of my personalities, my bongs, and the weed that I'm consuming today. I am so excited to be sitting down to record another episode because there is so much to cover today. But first things fucking first. It's time to light the fuck up and tune in. And if you haven't done so already, you better do so now. I am actually vaping today. I am vaping on this episode of Marihuanera, a podcast for potheads. I'm not going to talk about what specifically I'm vaping because I don't believe in free promo, especially not for the cannabis industry. So if you're out there and you would like me to shout out your weed or your vape or your product on this here show, you can email me hola@locatoraradio.com. Subject line, Marihuanera promo. That being said, I am vaping. It is some kind of a sativa. It's a fresh ass vape. And I'm not a big vape queen. Like, I really prefer flower and pre-rolls. Yeah, it's just not really my thing. It's kind of harsh on my throat and my lungs. And I like to be like a flower girl. You know what I mean? I like to be a flower child. And the vape is convenient, especially when you have to be discreet and when you're not necessarily trying to have those kinds of scents lingering about your person, depending on your day and who you're around. Also, like, I just ran out of bud. I know, but things have been so crazy recently, so wild, so out of this world, so bonkers as of late. I just haven't had time to, like, do a lot of my regular shit. So we're going to cover a fuck ton of topics today. bear with me, stay with me. I want to start with this show that I have been watching on Hulu. It is called Extreme Cougar Wives. Now, this show was filmed a few years ago, I think like around 2012 or something. But basically, it is the most batshit reality TV I have ever seen. And here's why. I've only seen a few episodes, but there's some major like Mary Kay Letourneau energy with these old white ladies and the like young Latino men that they are like falling in love with and having flings with and marrying in some instances. So Extreme Cougar Wives, and I believe that most of these couples are somewhere in California. Extreme Cougar Wives, there's this one couple where it's like a young, very handsome Nicaraguense, and he's like 21 years old, and he is marrying a 53-year-old white woman who is older than his mother. And when they find out that the two of them went and eloped, and that the wife is actually older than this man's mother, it was like a shitstorm. It was a fucking mess. It freaked me out when during their wedding ceremony, which they called like a hand harvesting ceremony, she's like a Wiccan on top of it all. On top of the Wiccan hand harvesting ceremony, the young man, and his name is escaping me right now. Oh, I'm so upset. Let me see if I remember it, if I pull it up. But the 21-year-old Latino, he shares while he's delivering his vows that he met her when he was 14, friends with her daughter. And he would go to their house for birthday parties. And now as a 21-year-old, they're dating and getting married. Grooming much. And that's just one of the couples, my friends. My God, there's another couple. I remember this guy. His name is Octavio. And I don't know too much about the backstory and when they met, but it was also a situation where like he was like young and then she was like way older and then he got older and then they got together. And so when Octavio takes his like 65-year-old girlfriend to the beach, his friends are like not having it. They're like, what is going on here? And now look, I'm down for a good age gap relationship. My parents are in an age gap relationship. A fuck ton of my friends have parents who have age gap relationships. But sometimes we like look back at those stories and we're like, hold on a second. What was the age difference? When did you guys meet? How old were you? You have to admit, there are just some shady happenings. There's this third couple with this woman named Geraldine, and she is literally 89 years old. 89 years old. Love it. Love that for her. She met her boyfriend when he was 19. Yes, when he was 19. And then a little bit of time passed and then they got together and now they've been together for 11 years and it's a whole thing, right? And they're like real hot and heavy. And he's like a younger Latino man too. It's just fascinating to me because there seems to be some sort of a trend. Go check it out, Extreme Cougar Wives. Apparently that first couple with the Wiccan lady and the hand harvesting ceremony, and she was grooming him because he was friends with her daughter and she knew him when he was 14. The 53-year-old who's older than her husband's mother. Yes, that one. Okay, her name is Jude. And apparently they're like from Palmdale and they're still together. One of my followers, because I had been posting this to my stories, my Instagram stories, one of my followers had responded to my IG stories and she was like, oh my God, I know them. I like grew up around them. The brother became a sheriff, problematic, apparently, allegedly, and they're still together. The young Latino and the old white lady are still together. So just saying, this is some really interesting shit. It is very entertaining, very fascinating. Go check it out on Hulu, Extreme Cougar Wives, and really smoke something like very strong when you watch. It's pure drama, especially when these young Latino guys are like trying to introduce these old ass ladies to their families. And their families are like, what in heaven? What in God's name? What on earth, what in the world is happening here? You know, that's my official stoner reality TV recommendation of the week. go watch Extreme Cougar Wives. Okay, so can I talk about how it is actually super hard to exist in this world as a bad bitch? Like, it's as difficult as people think it's easy, if that makes sense to your pothead brains in this moment. Like, people love to assume that, like, if you're a pretty girl, that everyone is, like, super nice to you, which is, like, mostly true, except when they're mean, or that you just get lots of things for free, which is also very much true. But it's not just that. Like, sometimes you're such a bad bitch that you can't get anything done. Like, all the service is horrible, and, like, nobody can actually listen to the words that you're saying because they're, like, too busy staring at, like, your camel toe or whatever, because you have, like, the fattest pussy on earth, obviously. You know what I mean? So, like, for example, this happened to me recently and I'm still pissed about it, but it worked out in the end because, bad bitch, listen. I was out and about and doing things, and my right rear mirror on my car, my vehicle that I get around the city of Los Angeles with, it's a necessity for me, my right rear window was gone, just, like, missing, not attached to my car anymore. There was, like, a little wire sticking out. It was so sad, and I couldn't find the mirror anywhere, nowhere to be seen. So I take my car in to the dealer all the way out in the valley in Van Nuys, and I don't go to the valley. I don't go to the valley. I don't go to there. But I took my ass over there because it was, like, the soonest possible appointment that I could find, because I was on a tight schedule. I was about to go on a road trip from LA to Joshua Tree to San Diego with my friends visiting from out of town. So I went in a week before I'm due to go on my road trip. My friends are flying in. One of my friends was flying in, the other driving in from another faraway California location. And I'm like, okay, guys, Here I am at the dealer with all the mechanics who work on cars, like, for a living. And here I am just, like, toda chancluda, like, with my mask and my sunglasses and my hat and just, like, my workout gear and my fucked up little car. And I'm just asking you at the mechanic, at the dealer, to please replace the clearly, obviously missing mirror, right? So the guy that was helping me was very, very, very flirty and very weedy, 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 and this and that, and what do you do, and what do you do for fun, and and, oh, you're going on a road trip, oh, what are you going to do, like, very chatty. And I'm like, yeah, so I need my window replaced, I mean my mirror replaced, you know, yes, I'm, so I need my mirror replaced, I need to get my mirror replaced, can you also, I don't know, can you check the alignment? Can you change the oil? Regular stuff, I think. I think this is routine. I think this is normal. I think I'm not asking that much, right? So he tells me, well, since it's a part, we're going to have to order it. We're going to have to keep the car. We're going to give you a rental, and we will call you when your car is finished. You can come back and pick it up, and it'll be all good. We're going to cover the cost of the rental. So that's all fine and good, but the next day or 2 days later, whenever it was that they call me, that my car was done, that it was ready to be picked up, I go over there back to the valley again. I don't go there, but I'm going to pick up my car because they told me that it was finished and it was ready to be picked up. So I go, I drop off the rental, I go to the dealer, I go to the mechanic, and they bring out my car after I already pay the bill, right? They bring out my car. And I can see that the mirror, my right rear mirror, is still missing. It's still unattached. They did not replace it. And the guy comes out of the car. He, like, jogs on over to me, hands me my key. And he's like, here's your car. And, hey, I don't know if you knew this, but, you know, your mirror is missing. That's dangerous. You should get that checked out. Oh my God, listeners, whoever's out there, whoever's listening, I was so beside myself because I fucking knew that this motherfucker was not listening to me or paying attention the day that I took my car in and gave him instructions on what needed to be fixed. And clearly you can see with your eyes that the mirror is still missing. It doesn't take a mechanic It doesn't take a motor vehicle specialist to know that you have to replace a missing mirror on a car. So I had to be a little bit bitchy, I can't lie, because now I've gone to the Valley twice and I'm going to have to go again a third time because I can't drive my car like this. I'm going to get pulled over. I'm going to get tickets. I already have outstanding tickets. Like I can't. That's another story for another time. But I just can't do all of that right now. You know what I'm saying? So I had to put my little size 7 feet down and say, sir, I need a solution here and you need to extend my rental because I'm going out of town. And that's why I brought my car in, and that's why I asked you to replace my mirror, and you haven't done it, and you told me that my car was ready, but here we are, and it's clearly not. So that was one of those moments where I was like, wow, being a bad bitch worked against me today. But then what happened was they extended my rental for like a week. I drove my friends in this brand new fucking car for free, essentially, to Joshua Tree, where we stayed in the desert. We got a cute little Airbnb with a pool, and we were just poolside and smoking and just getting lit and just making margs and watching Love Island and singing karaoke. It was magical. So shout out LA. You can actually tune into my episode with LA and our friend Lainey, who doesn't appear on the episode, but Lainey was with us, you know, in the debauchery. Episode five. Hello from the high desert. That was that experience. So we went from J Tree, then we drove down to San Diego. We went out, we drank some more, we smoked some more. We went to the beach, Coronado Island. It was cute. San Diego's cute. San Diego's a whole world, is a whole experience. I really liked it. And I kind of realized when I was down there, like, I don't know shit about San Diego. I didn't go to San Diego growing up. Like, I don't have any experience in San Diego. I've gone a couple times, but I'm really like, I want to know more. I want to go down there. I want to hang out. Should we do a meetup? Should we do a smoke sesh? Should we do a Mighty Juanetta something or other in San Diego? If you're in San Diego or the surrounding areas, if you're in Tijuana, fuck, DM, comment, leave a review, tell me somehow, because if I know that you guys are out there, like, we're planning events, we're scheduling events, I'm trying to tour with this shit. So if you're in a city and there's enough listeners and you let us know, leave a review on Apple Podcasts and tell us where you're listening from. And if you would be down to come out for a listening party or a smoke sesh, like, please let us know because we are down. Speaking of which, we have our very first ever inaugural Mighty Juanetta listening party and smoke sesh coming up September 24th in downtown LA area, approximate. And tickets are probably up by the time you are listening to this episode. Tickets are probably already live. Maybe they're already sold out. Hard to say. If not, go on my Instagram, subscribe to Besitos at locatoraradio.com or become a patron for first dibs on tickets because it's going to be a small venue. It's going to be limited tickets. Like, we're really only selling 75 tickets. So we are going to let our patrons know first, and then we're going to let our newsletter subscribers know. They're going to be the first people who even are able to buy tickets, right? So if you're listening and you haven't seen any peep about tickets or links or a ticket link on Instagram or on Twitter, it's because our patrons and our newsletter subscribers are buying those tickets first. And you just have to wait your turn. And hopefully there are enough tickets that everybody who wants to go can show up. But if not, we do have an alternative. We're going to be doing virtual smoke sessions on Zoom, and they're going to be chill. So the first one is going to be like, we're getting to know each other as stoners. And that is also accessible through our Locatora Productions Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com and you type in Locatora Productions, you will see the Mighty Juanetta tier is part of our Locatora Productions Patreon. And if you subscribe and become a Mighty Juanetta patron, you get invited to those monthly virtual smoke sessions. So those are like way more, we can have as many people we want on a virtual smoke session, you know? But the in-person events, because of the pandemic, because of the size of the venue, and because we want to keep things, you know, relatively small with everything going on, we can only sell so many tickets. So that's how you can get a ticket. And if you didn't get a ticket, This time, for this smoke session, we are going to be doing a virtual smoke session in September. First Marihuanera Patreon exclusive virtual remote smoke session is going to be September 17th in the evening sometime. I want to be conscientious of our East Coast listeners, our East Coast marihuaneras, our East Coast stoners, as well as those living in Central Time, Mountain Time, wherever the fuck you're listening from. So it's going to be the evening of September 17th. I put out a poll on the Marihuaneta Patreon to ask our patrons like what kind of date time they would like, and the slim majority, because it was honestly kind of even across the board, but there was a slim majority for September 17th. So that's when we're going to do our first one. I love the idea of doing these virtual smoke sessions because often I feel like as stoners, we like to smoke at home and we like to smoke alone, but we also like to smoke with company. And with COVID, with people living far, with limited tickets for things, I just felt like having the monthly virtual smoke sesh is a good option. So head to the Locatora Productions Patreon if you want to join us September 17th. And marihuaneras, do not forget that if you are a clumsy motherfucking stoner like me and you break every bong, piece, or pipe you have ever laid your filthy little hands on, you want to head over to Mota Glass and use our affiliate code MarihuaneraP4P for a substantial discount off of your next Mota Glass purchase. I smoke out of a Mota Glass bong. It's a big ass bong. It's like the size of my fucking calf. It like is tall, you know? And it's a great smoke. I love it. So head on over to mota-glass.com and use our affiliate code Marihuanera, the letter P, the number 4, the letter P, for a discount on your next purchase. I want to give another big shout out to Team Marihuanera, which also makes them Team Locatora Productions. Our audio editor is Stephanie Franco. She brings the brilliant sound and the brilliant editing every week. Our logo is by Micah Amaro. Gorgeous logo. Look out for Marihuanera branded merch in the future. We're working on it, but we want it to be perfect. So we're waiting, but keep an eye out because it really is coming. I have plots and plans. You know, I'm scheming on merch. I'm always scheming on something. If you guys could see the inside of my brain, it's something. There's just a lot going on. There's lots of cogs, lots of wheels are turning at all times. So just know I'm thinking about you guys. I'm thinking about what we like, what we need as stoners, and the cute shit that we want to enhance our smoking experiences. So just keep an eye out for that. I also want to shout out, of course, Crisol, who did the Marihuaneta jingle. You know it. You love it. Book Crisol on your fucking lineups if you have any taste, or else I'll be grumpy.
Oh my goodness, Lauren Yoshiko, I am so excited to be talking to you today, to be in conversation here on Marihuaneta, a podcast for potheads. I am so excited not only to talk as potheads, but also as podcasters.
Yes, I'm so happy.
Who have cannabis podcasts.
That's right. I'm very happy to be here.
So Broccoli Talk, I was actually just listening to your Broccoli Talk podcast this morning in preparation for our interview, and I was living for the Weedy Friendships episode. It was so cute.
It was cute.
It was so cute, and I opened Marihuaneta with a story about how I smoked weed for the first time at a sleepover with girlfriends.
Oh my God. That's and precious.
You shared your story
on
the Weedy episode, and I would love for you to share the story of like how your relationship with weed started here for our Marihuaneta listeners.
Yes, happily. That is adorable that you had it. In that podcast, I talked about how I had like very innocent sleepovers as a child. So the idea of weed getting busted out at one of my childhood sleepovers cracks me up because I think I would have scared the shit out of them. But my first interaction really was with a close girlfriend who was my cousin, and it was a special moment because I can remember it exactly. It was when I first My parents divorced when I was like 15, and that weekend, like, the announcement dropped, and my mom's sister came to visit, and my cousin and I are a week apart, so always have grown up together and paired together like sisters. And it was the first visit as teenagers. We were both sort of like wearing makeup for the first time and more interested in boys. And at one point she asked if I was smoking weed, and I said, yeah, but I really had no idea what I was doing. And I had like hung out with people who had bought weed the last weekend when I hung out with them. And so I knew of a person to obtain weed from just like a few days ago. And was able to get us weed, and she had a pipe, and she showed me how to hit a pipe for the first time that weekend, and it was such a safe, nurturing space. I'm feeling really grateful that that was my introduction. But I grew up in Southern Oregon, which is like, technically it's the tip of the Emerald Triangle. Like, there's so much weed culture. Like, I had uncles on both sides of my family who grew weed at home and always smelled like weed. And so it wasn't like an intimidating thing, but even though I learned how in high school, I don't think I really enjoyed it until I was in college. I went to school in Santa Cruz, where weed is like the mascot of UC Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh. Yes, I love that you had like family who was smoking and open. And I'd love to hear more about your family's sort of attitude towards weed, because a lot of my listeners come from Catholic families, Latinx families, where there tends to be a little bit more stigma around cannabis use.
Yeah.
And some have asked specifically, we really want to hear from folks like who came from families that like their parents were potheads and their parents were open and their parents were smoking and had a different sort of experience. It's so foreign to me. I'd love to hear more about what that was like growing up.
You know, I hear that as well. And I also, so I'm half Japanese. My mother is Japanese, but my mom is fifth generation Japanese. So I am super American, even if I am Hapa. And the my Japanese family has been in Oregon that entire time. So they are like West Coast people through and through. And then my dad's side was more liberal people that kind of like questioned the norm. His dad was a psychologist in the Bay Area. So I think that like put ingredients of like being more open to the unknown and like alternative wellness stuff, because by the time I came around, I know that now I've learned one of my uncles like dodged the draft in the 70s and went up to Canada and had an illegal pot farm, and my grandma and grandpa went up there and trimmed sometimes, like my prim and proper little Japanese grandparents, who currently, she wasn't okay with weed for a while. So it's funny to hear, realize like my family was actually even more liberal than they were in my time in the 90s and 2000s back in the day. And I never saw my parents smoke. Like, that is an interesting experience that I can't relate to, but people always make assumptions that I have like a tiger mom, or I had like really strict parents, and I just didn't. I was weirdly a perfectionist, but it was all me. I like had the most psychotic teacher's pet philosophy. I don't know where it came from. There's some first child stuff going on there.
Ooh, yeah, as a first daughter, first grandchild. Oh my God,
I was such an overachiever. I was such an overachiever, man. And so they never were like worried about me. And when I did get into weed in college, they were like, oh man, like I remember my old days. And like my mom like hung out in the dorms. Like when she visited me once, she hit my disgusting bong freshman year. That was, the water was so dirty. And so she can hang. My dad is like really into vaping now, because I think he's just a big guy and his tolerance is so high. He just thinks he needs like 80% anything to feel anything
at all times.
But I can now, my mom, I really am happy to have found like a comfortable middle ground, because even though I know she like partied back in the day, as my mom, she was more not into it and was sort of like wanted me to, she was like, you know, I smoked too, but after a certain point, you just quit, you just stop. And that was definitely the vibe. And then college, I graduated and I didn't really stop. And whenever she visited, she'd be like, is this how much you smoke like every day? And there were a lot of those kind of questions. And I would just be like, yeah, I mean, yeah. But She also knew that I was like a tense person when I was young. I was stressed out. Like, I did put anxiety on myself, this whole perfectionist thing. And I think weed really helped me curb that. And my family can't deny it, that I don't get as pissed off as frequently.
That's real.
So there, I think at this point with it friggin' a career, and also like weed education, like she sees now, she's so grateful that like I've shown her 5 milligram gummies and how they can substitute her Ambien at night. And it's just like getting to know weed on a different level for her, where it's like, okay, this isn't just a drug that kids do in college. Like, this is a medicine that can be used in different ways throughout your life or at the same time. So yeah, I definitely had a comfortable, and like, I remember in high school, there was like a medical clinic across the street in Southern Oregon. Like, medical marijuana was normalized by the time I was of age in Oregon. And that also really, you know, it's so different. I've met more people now from like Detroit and stuff where they're like, I never touched weed till I was a senior in college because I was so scared of it. Just like the association with gangs, the association with violence, all that stuff. So I did have like an idyllic, charmed introduction to weed just being in Southern Oregon.
That is so fascinating how geography and location, especially as it has to do with criminalization, legalization, just completely shapes the landscape.
I was in a super white community too, so I was not exposed to a lot of criminalization, period. Like, my concept of crime was like teachers banging students, people, people.
Oh, no.
Oh yeah, by the way, my dad is a defense attorney, so I am very familiar with the type of crime that was in Roseburg. Like, I would go, when I was young, if I had free time after school, my dad was in a trial, I would just walk into the courthouse and be like, hey, what's up, to the security guard, and sit in the back of a courtroom and watch my dad in court. No context.
Stop it.
No context of what I'm listening to. And there was one time he had said like, oh, I've got a big case this week, let me know if you can stop by. And I came by after school one time and I sit down and like, this girl is giving a harrowing testimony of being seduced by a teacher and him, and like inviting him over to her house and doing stuff with him. And then like the teacher comes on the stand and like there's a twist and like he has a different story and I'm like, oh my God. And those were just like normal things. It's so theatrical, like the world of court, and like everyone sees it in true crime now, like it's such a popular part of pop culture, but like it really is that, like,
yeah,
it's like the OJ fictional show didn't fictionalize the trial. Like, that is how shit goes. It is such a theater. The actors, the lawyers are actors. They are talking to the jury as an audience. Everything is strategic. Every pause for drama effect. Like, it's just one big show. And if you can pay for a good lawyer, they're going to put on a better show and they're going to win you the case. And like, that is so much bigger than being innocent or guilty. It's so sad.
It's wild. And it's so interesting to hear you say that, because before I started podcasting full time, I worked for a significant amount of time as a rape crisis and domestic violence counselor advocate. And
oh my God.
Yeah, part of the job was to accompany my clients to court, whether that be child support court or seeking restraining orders, or in some cases, very few cases, however, criminal
trial
court, because so few DV and SA cases make it to that point. It was my least frequent experience. But I remember going to criminal court, and my job was to sit on the witness stand with my client while they were being cross-examined.
Wow.
And I remember thinking something very similar to what you were thinking. The theater of it all, but working in the system and being in the backstage of it all, it's nowhere near as it's just as wild and corrupt as they make it look like on TV, but it's nowhere near as sophisticated. You know, it's nowhere near as sophisticated.
It's just blatant.
Like, yeah, and I feel like the systems are very like 20 years ago, and their paperwork and their filing and their computers and the process and the
also
buildings
that.
And the, it's all kind of still
just
very
like
ancient.
1970s, yeah.
It's just, it's a weird world, you know, criminal court. So just very interesting that you had that experience as such a young person, and your dad, you know, like,
it's hilarious.
In it too.
So I guess that's another part of my weed origins, was like, A, feeling very safe and confident because my dad was a lawyer. So it's like, who isn't afraid to get out of trouble if their dad is one of the well-known defense attorneys in a very small town? And so I had like the safety to be like that FU energy to cops, but I never ever had to run from the cops. And it was such a small town that like, I mean, I got pulled over multiple times for speeding and it would be like, oh, you're so-and-so's brother. Like, you sure you can't let me off this time? And he would let me off. And like some other person being like, you know, oh, your dad screwed my sister over in one case. Like, you're absolutely getting like a huge ticket today. But one of the reasons I'm really happy to, yeah, living in a small town is that funny line between like comfort and like safety and having no sense of privacy whatsoever.
This is so, and this sounds like straight out of a movie to me. Like, I can't even.
That is what I secretly want to do, by the way, Mala. Like, I love telling stories, if you can't tell. I could go for days. I want to write movies. I want to write screenplays. I want to tell stories that you and I have been waiting to see on television.
Absolutely. I love this. I mean, I can totally see it. You're painting the picture. I would watch this movie. I would subscribe to this show. I am subscribed to this show.
You are.
I am subscribed to Broccoli Talk.
You are.
So I want to ask, okay, so at what point did you decide, I want to take my relationship with weed and also make it professional? How did it turn into your life's work?
You know, it is, it's funny because like when somebody graduates college with a writing degree or I think any creative degree, you're like, I'm going to be an artist. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write a movie. And then you get out in the real world and you're like, okay, I have to have my name on something. I need to just get somebody to let me make something so I start to have my name out there. And it's very hard to get those jobs when your name isn't anywhere else. And exactly. And you don't know what to pitch. You don't know what people want, what editors want. You're like, I don't know. I have these things I'm interested in. And I think I did like silly cold emails that went nowhere to various magazines and stuff. And then there was a local newspaper in Portland who started doing a weed column. And this was in like 2014 when all the conversations around just not even diversity, but like female voices in media was starting to come up where it was like, oh shit, like there are no female directors that are ever nominated at the Oscars. Like all that kind of stuff getting brought up and realizing like, should the exposés on female actresses maybe be written by women and not men? Like all those questions were starting to come up, those critiques of the first, I remember the first times, I remember at that point reading a review of Girls on like Vanity Fair magazine. You remember that show Girls? Mm-hmm. And it was written by a man. Yeah. It was written by a man and he shredded it. And I remember being like, God, I would love to know what like a woman of that age thinks about this show. I wrote that in the comment section and I got shredded. All these like, I mean, whoever the baby boomers sitting on vanityfair.com in the comment section were like, wow, I remember being a 20-year-old feminist too. And it was like wild to me, but that I felt it and we all felt it, but they hadn't felt it yet. And the weed column debuted with one guy writing it and he had a fake name, Willie Weed. And I remember just thinking like, they're probably interested in having a woman's voice. They are going to have to. That's like interesting. And so I had a medical card because it was just the easiest way to get the best weed safely in Oregon in 2014. I didn't know enough people because I like had become more of a stoner in California. So I literally just didn't know dealers, got a card. And so I could write reviews on strains because it wasn't fully legal yet. And I just sent an email to the local paper and was like, I have a card. I have a writing degree. I'd love to contribute to this column. And I was nervous and I remember thinking that I needed to like highlight my integrity on certain levels. Like I needed to somehow show I'm a weed authority, which at the time, like, what is that? Like, sure. Hi, I smoke weed every day. Like, what a crazy thing to type in 2014 for a work email.
Yeah.
And I remember trying to like phrase that as professionally and also trying to be like quippy and clever because it's like a snarky alt weekly and it's the most cringy email. But I said it all and they were like, yeah, let's get lunch tomorrow or something so casual like that with the head editor of the culture section. They're like drinking beer at lunch and my mind is just blown that like this is how life can be. And he had said like print out a draft of like a 600 word review. And I had I'd been like at my day job, like covertly printing out this like silly review of something like Alaska Thunderfuck or something. And I brought it in and he's like, this is cool. Yeah, we can run this next Wednesday. Like, we'll think of a name for you and we'll just like go from there. And it was like $20 a column. I mean, nothing. But it just was proof that like weed was the thing that gave me the confidence to send that email, because I wouldn't have been confident enough to just be like, hi, I want to write for Willamette Week. And they would be like, who are you? Why? So weed was my foot in the door to get anyone to let me write anything, which is so funny. But I think no one in 2014, there were not women writers who were about to be honest about consuming weed online, because the vibe was like, you'll be known as the weed writer forever. You could lose the ability to write about anything that isn't weed, or maybe you won't be taken seriously by other places like Vanity Fair or Newsweek or whatever. Now that's so hilarious because we see all this coverage and it's like hard to think about. But in 2014 and 2015, my entire family was worried that I was going to be pigeonholed, and I was too, as a weed writer, and that would be a bad thing and a limiting thing. And instead, it ended up being like the best thing possible for me, because it was something more unique than me just being like a good writer. It was like, oh man, she's a good writer that knows about weed, and now that's its own category entirely. So
very cool.
It really was just like sending that email, and then it just was like strain reviews, which led to farm write-ups, which led to meeting more people in the industry and learning about their challenges. And so like the first article I wrote that was a real article and not just a product review was like an update about a legal change that was closing like half the stores in town, and I felt excited to like explain that, and then it just kind of expanded from there. And once the media outlets got more interested in coverage that wasn't just like the latest raid of a farm, as legalization continued, people wanted a different kind of coverage, or they wanted something on April 20th to publish. And then here we are, people. We've got independent cannabis media outlets that want content. Yeah. And I'm like the main editor at Thrillist now for the weed section, and they're just like growing. They just want me to find more writers and find more content, and it's just fascinating.
I love to see it. It's so exciting, and it's really cool to sort of, not sort of, but to hear you talk about your own role in creating this lane and making it as robust as it is now with your own work and your own interests and your own writing. And I love to hear about how women of color are part of this industry in ways that like maybe we're not even thinking of, like unless you're really in it, in the weeds of weed, the writing, the journalism, the art side of it, the content side of it. And I've been thinking about like, you know, what is missing in the content and art and media side of cannabis. And I'm wondering if you have your own sort of perspective on like the holes and what you would like to see more of.
You know, there's honestly nothing but holes. When it's like, it feels overwhelming, and it feels like, and I have days where I'm like, oh my God, we're all too late. We're all too late, but we're not. Like once you step back and really look at everything happening, like right now, the chaos going on in New York, like it hasn't even started yet. It hasn't even opened up. They haven't started business yet, and it's really exciting. But it really is like with the way legalization trickles down, it gives so much opportunity for people to get involved early on in ways that you just can't elsewhere. It is like in Portland, like we have a restaurant pipeline. It's like there's a culture for food carts. You can, if you're a nobody, you can start selling something out of your car, and then you can graduate to a food cart and graduate to a restaurant. But like, that doesn't exist for many industries, or really in other places like that. Like, it's very hard to start from nothing and be making like a good living, like a company that could maybe make $5,000 a year, like an edible company or whatever. And in weed, it's so exciting, and you get to be one of those things on the shelves of these stores that are opening for the first time, that there is a possibility. Now, it's really competitive. Like, I should back up, because we're talking about media and I'm just thinking about like industry stuff. But yeah, it is, the media landscape is so sparse still, because it's like, you think about, look at alcohol. Like, we have mainstream publications that touch on big alcohol stories. Like, we all know about Ryan Reynolds making a gin acquisition and like weird shit like that. And then you've got food magazines that care deeply about alcohol and report on that. And then you've got alcohol magazines that are so huge and so niche that you and I don't read, don't even know the names of, but people like care. Those throw conferences, they throw events, they have subscription services, like those have their own thing. And then there's independent spots. Yes. Oh my God. There's like the whole advertising world, and then independent stuff in, you know, wine shops that no one knows about except for the people that live in a half mile around it in town. Like that's just like one look at all the different facets and the different communities that a product can touch that is so beloved and versatile. And like with weed's versatility as a medicine, as a fun product, as a conversation starter, a therapy starter, like there's so many conversations yet to be had about cannabis and around it. And I think there is actually a ton of space. And you talked about women of color and where that community is in all this. And on one hand, like there's been so much talk about women and weed, and when you really look at the numbers, it's still abysmal. Like it's still way more males are making way more money in weed than women, and they have way more power, way more. All the executive roles are predominantly men by like 70% still. Like by no means is it like 50-50 in weed at all. So that's one thing, and there's a ton of work to do there still. It's the same limitations of these glass ceiling bullshit of women not thinking they're worth what they could be getting, and women not asking for as much power or compensation or responsibilities as a man with less experience would have confidence asking for. And then I think there's another asterisk that makes it more challenging in weed, that a lot of these businesses internally, whether it's a media outlet or a production company, we're like, we think we're outside of the normal business a little bit. And we want to be. Mm-hmm. Like, weed businesses want, I think a lot of people in weed believe that business can be done better and be done in a different way. And we're also like, hey, we're in weed. Like, we get to smoke weed at work. We get to do things a little differently. But it's really easy to let just, like, professional standards fall away because of that exciting new territory of getting to be weird, getting to be a little different. And then all of a sudden there's like rampant sexual harassment happening at a company that's supposed to be a nice mom and pop family business. And there you go. So I think women feel, it's like, I don't think we're as protected in weed, and it can feel a little scarier in weed at times because people don't act as professionally all the time. I feel very safe in a corporate office. I don't think anything bad really is going to happen. In a weed company, something actually bad can happen when people are off the grid or feel like they operate outside of mainstream business world intentionally. And you know, you hear these nightmare stories of women that work at farms out in the middle of nowhere in California that get told, you know, you're not going to get paid unless you do XYZ type of thing. Like that culture, even if that's not happening right this second, it was happening 3 years ago, and that energy is still, I don't think we feel as, I think it can be a little freaky and a little more intimidating, and you have to find people to work with that you can trust.
Lauren Yoshiko, thank you so much.
That was so fun. I'm so excited to see you around the media world.
Okay, so this is the part of the episode where I shout out arguably some of the most important people in the Locatora multiverse, right? So we've got Locatora Radio, our flagship podcast. We've got Locas por Libros, Diosas Book Club. We've got Marihuanera, a podcast for podheads. And we have some other fun projects coming up for all you guys to participate in. And our Patreon supporters make all of this possible. A weekly podcast has weekly bills, honey, and we have 2 weekly podcasts. That means every time we put out a new episode, we have bills on bills to make sure that we can get the project and push it out to you guys. And one way that we're able to pay our artists who make our logos, our audio editor, our friends who are musicians and composers who make our music, and pay the subscription fees, the hosting fees, all the fees associated with creating a full-on production, a show, and running a production house. And our patrons make that possible, right? So part of the incentives to be a Locatora Productions patron is that you get your name said on air every episode of Marihuanera, a podcast for potheads. So I'm going to shout out our Marihuaneta tier patrons. That's the $10 tier. That's virtual smoke sessions, extended and rough cuts of episodes, behind the scenes content, my notes and my scripts from my episodes. You can see the creative process if you dare, if you're into that, you know. And when we have new visuals and new things that we haven't posted online yet, our patrons get to see all that stuff first. That's the $10 tier. We also have a $25 tier called Locamores Anonymous. And at $25 a month, it gives you access to all of the tiers on our Patreon. If you pledge $25 a month, you get Marihuaneta, you get Locas por Libros, and you get the $5 tier, which is our Locatora Radio intro tier, right? So Marihuaneta and Locamores Anonymous patrons, I want to thank Taylor, Susana, Margarita, AC, Athena, Erica, Eric, Mariah, Serena, Priscilla, Yessi, Ichel, Corina, Alejandra, Nina, Victoria, Joandra, Kiki, Gerardo, Naomi, Oli, Damari, Ruthie, Christian, Crisol, Madison, Sam, Yvonne, Carla, Magdalena, Christina, Edna, Selena, Rosalina, Sirenia, Stephanie, Carla, Dan, Ajopi, and Christina. Thank you all for your continued support. And those of you who are not on Patreon yet, clearly it's a party over here, so come join us. You can head to patreon.com/locatora_productions for more. Thank you for lighting up and tuning in to Marihuaneta, a podcast for potheads. I'm your host, Mala Munoz. Please visit locatoraradio.com to learn more about us and Locatora Productions. Follow us across social media. I'm at Mala_Munoz. You can also follow us at Locatora_radio. Thank you so much for lighting up and tuning in. Our audio editor is Stephanie Franco. Our Marihuaneta jingle is by Crystal Lomeli. Marihuaneta logo art is done by the incredible Micah Amaro. This episode written and hosted by me, Mala. Thank you for joining us. This has been a Locatora production.